All right, first episode in a couple days here. We've had a light schedule due to the holidays, but we got a ton of news to catch up on here. And then we're also going to do our power forward rankings. This is another really interesting one in terms of deciding exactly who is a power forward, as well as trying to rank these guys. Always fun episodes. We've already done the small forwards and the shooting guards. Of course, we're sponsored today by Draft. Use the promo code CAPSPACE on your first deposit, and you can play a real money game for free with the Draft app or at draft.com. Once again, that promo code CAPSPACE. Okay, while we get started here with some news, Danny, what do you think is the biggest thing that's happened here since we have like this 4-page long list of stuff we have to do? So just, yeah, you know, well, pick one out immediately.
Well, I think we can start with just the massive amount of point guard injuries. I mean, there have been a whole rash of them. I mean, the one that looked the worst at the time was Jeff Teague. There was a strange late fourth quarter jump ball, which meant everybody was going after it aggressively, and he went down with a knee injury. There was concern that there might have been structural damage. Fortunately, they got about as good news as you could get. It was a grade one sprain of his MCL. He'll be out, I believe I saw, 2 to 4 weeks. And so, yeah, you know, that is obviously unfortunate, and Minnesota's grappling for playoff position, but it is an opportunity to get some quality time with Tyus Jones, who I thought, I watched a little bit of their game against Milwaukee, the part of the game when they were playing well as opposed to when they lost the lead, and he looked pretty good. So that'll be important for them in the near term and, of course, in the long term.
Yeah, and the question, as it so often is in these circumstances, will be what happens with the backup to the backup. Aaron Brooks had an illness. He only played 4 minutes the other night. There's been talk that Jimmy Butler, you know, because he needs even more of a burden, can just play some backup point guard. Jamal Crawford, not really a backup point guard at this point in his career, but he could maybe bring the ball up floor. But certainly their perimeter depth will be tested here with this Teague absence. In other news, Damian Lillard, about a week ago, had suffered a hamstring injury. Didn't play over last weekend. Talk was he would return Thursday. And by that point, by Wednesday, he wasn't even on the injury report. Then all of a sudden he became questionable on Thursday. He warmed up, did not play in their nice comeback win against Philly. So his status remains up in the air for these next couple of games. The hamstring certainly could be tricky, and that timeline, don't know this for sure, but in the absence of transparency, you might think, hey, maybe he actually like tweaked it a little bit again, and that was why, you know, he returned to the injury report Thursday. But for Portland, they are lucky that their main competition is for the playoffs are not exactly running and hiding, but there it is basically right now a 9-team race for 8 slots. And so with New Orleans, Utah in that mix, they have their own injury concerns, of course, and Portland seems like really those are the three that are going to be pushing for those very last 2 spots. They can't afford to lose any ground there.
Yeah, and another team that can't afford to lose ground is Miami. Goran Dragic is now back. He missed 3 games due to an elbow issue, and then he's played the last 2. But what's concerning there is he said that he might have elbow pain for another month. So basically he's playing through this, and Miami has a lot of good guards, but they do not have other guards that can do what Goran Dragic, like his role within the offense. And so how he looks in this time where he's, you know, not 100% but still playing through it is going to be important, because Miami needs all of the offense they can get to survive this, even though their defense has been good.
Yeah, and also in Miami, Dion Waiters now could be looking at a multi-week absence due to his troublesome ankle, per Tom DeAngelo, the Heat's beat writer. You recall that he was talking about having off-season ankle surgery, and that apparently, the first time I'd heard this, had he had that surgery, could have been as much as 8 to 10 months of rehab. So he decided to forego that surgery, understandably, in the off-season, and he got that nice contract. But I guess the hope is that with this, he can kind of try to get it right, do some rehab and rest, and then be available for their stretch run. But with the way he was playing and how good Josh Richardson and Wayne Ellington have been for them, you know, I don't think this really affects them that much. It's just, you know, they also have these other injuries with Winslow and Magruder out too. So, but in the starting lineup, I think, you know, Richardson and Ellington have been better than Waiters, but they really need to find someone else who can get to the basket just a little bit. But Waiters hadn't really been that guy this season either.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the Lakers have really been missing Lonzo Ball. He has a shoulder sprain in his left side. He actually played through the injury in their game a week ago Saturday, but then they ruled him out for a week, and then they're going to reevaluate it. And they have had trouble getting their offense going. They have other guards guards. Again, it's another team that has other guards, but they don't have anybody who does what Lonzo can do. And along those similar lines, though they got a nice win against Cleveland, De'Aaron Fox has been out. He has a partial tear in his quad muscle and his right leg. And he was going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks, but that's about a week ago, so we can assume he'll be out about another week.
Yeah, getting back to the Eastern Conference, Victor Oladipo, man, these notes are so long, I gotta like control F for the guys' names. He was ruled out before their game on Wednesday, and he will miss tonight's game against Chicago as well. He's been dealing with right knee soreness for much of the month. Don't know what the timetable precisely is going to be there. What else we got here?
On the knee soreness path, Paul George has been dealing with that for a little. He's been dealing with knee soreness and forearm tightness. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, that forearm tightness, George said it's been a little wacky. There's no actual injury, but he says it's been affecting his shot. And then this knee soreness, the first we've heard of that, you recall he missed time with a calf injury. But this would be interesting to see whether Carmelo Anthony can get more involved in the offense. I think they've actually been 12-3 over their last 15 games, in part because he's been less involved in the offense, but they're going to need him now. And maybe Alex Abrines can use this as an opportunity to get back on track, get back into the rotation. And, you know, we'll continue to see what Josh Huestis can provide there as well. No indication yet on how long this could be for George. Hopefully just a short-term management type of thing there.
Well, we can jump to Orlando. Orlando's been dealing with just a whole bunch of injuries, some of which are more recently occurring, some of which are their guys coming back. So the big one right now is Nick Vucevic broke his left hand. He will be out 6 to 8 weeks. He's in just in the early phases of that. John Isaac has another ankle issue. It's fortunately not as bad as the last one that he was dealing with where he missed a bunch of time, but he's missed 20 of their last 23 games. I think it might even be a little bit more than that. I can't remember when we put that in there. And then Aaron Gordon had been out for a while, but he returned in their home win against the Detroit Pistons on Thursday night.
Yeah, Evan Fournier, same thing. And those two guys still apparently feeling some soreness. Fournier, a right foot issue, according to John Denton out of Orlando, but he's still expected to play on Saturday against the Heat. But never good when a guy comes back from an injury and then immediately he's got soreness still and they're trying to manage it. But for Orlando, very interesting to me. I really want to see what they look like without Vucevic, because my hypothesis has been that he's a big part of what's wrong with their defense. And they did hold the Pistons, I think, to double digits in that game Thursday. And there's also a chance for Bismack Biyombo finally to play in what really should be his role, which is as a center with, you know, more perimeter-oriented players around him. And he obviously has been a massive disappointment on that contract he signed. We'll see whether, in fact, he can start to at least provide them with some value. But I really am going to be very interested to see what happens to their defense. You know, now when they play Mo Spates at backup center, it'll go in the toilet again. But at least they're not going to be playing Spates at the four too much, hopefully.
Let's take a little break from the injuries and talk some two-way contracts, which has been something you and I have been following, and a couple of different ways that this has gone recently. So one was Alex Poitras, former Kentucky player who's bounced around a little bit over the last couple of years, signed a two-way contract with the Indiana Pacers. They have signed him now to a full NBA contract. I believe it is non-guaranteed for this year, or lightly guaranteed for this year. And then he has like a late July guarantee date for next season. So congratulations to him for getting a full NBA contract. And hopefully his experience on that NBA contract is better than the last two-way guy that was converted to an NBA contract, Mike James, who got no additional guaranteed money on his contract and was shortly cut so that the Phoenix Suns could sign Isaiah Cannon.
Yeah, and this is another example we talked about with Gary Payton of this two-way rule where you have these 45 days, you play so well that it's like, oh, you have to get cut or you get signed to another one of these contracts. And then, you know, yeah, the Mike James thing isn't as bad to me. You know, I thought it was interesting that he didn't get any guaranteed money, but they fully intended to keep him on the roster, and so he continued to make an NBA salary during that time. It's better than if they had just sent him back to the G League for the rest of the year, and he would have just been making, you know, that $75,000 per year prorated G League salary. So I don't think it's the end of the world that James got cut. You know, I think he had a nice run, but ultimately proved to not be that efficient. And Cannon has actually been shooting well for them, so they desperately need some shooting. I think he's probably a better option for them than James. So I understand that. And then the other thing that's coming up now very quickly, the Clippers with their walking wounded, we can get to them. Danilo Gallinari said before Christmas he expects to miss 6 weeks of action with that glue glute, what seemed to be a recurrence of that glute issue. Doc Rivers had said, oh, I hope it's not as bad as last time. It's only a couple of games. Well, after an MRI, that proved not to be the case. Wes Johnson, they are finally just now getting him back after a couple of weeks with a sore foot. So that'll help them. But they've been starting Jamil Wilson and CJ Williams, both two-way guys. Those guys, you know, I think are in like their last 10 and 6 days or something of their 45 days respectively. And so the question now, Danny, is what do the Clippers do to keep them around? They're going to have to make some cuts if they want to still have these guys on the team. And of course, they can unilaterally convert them into NBA contracts should they desire. But some people are going to have to go.
And not only are some people going to have to go, but they're really close to the luxury tax. My notes have it that they're about 120,000 below the luxury tax line. So while they are hard capped, and the hard cap line is not the luxury tax line, the apron is higher than that, I'm guessing, considering where their team is, they're not going to be super thrilled about that. So yeah, the roster spot issue is there too. I mean, I would say, at least for me, Bryce Johnson is probably the closest to it. But then again, this gets into the definitional stuff with the Clippers, because they are, you know, they're kind of in this feasible race. I'm sure we'll talk about this on the 15 and 60. So one of the logical ways that you could talk about this is like, oh, well, they could just trade some of those veteran guys who are not necessarily a part of their future, and then that would open up this space. But it's like, well, then what if they think they're better than that? And so it's complicated, and it will stay complicated, because they're getting Blake Griffin back, which is good. He might play in Friday night's game against the Lakers. We don't know. If he plays, he'll start. But they need to know what they are, and they need to be honest about it, because all of these decisions are running together, and the timeline is very, very tight on all of it.
Yeah, and they've looked better since Teodosic returned. You know, of course, a reminder, Pat Beverly is out for the year. Gallo's going to be out for a while as well. And, you know, Bryce Johnson is kind of an obvious guy to move on from, but really what they need to do is, and I'm not sure how much money they've spent, I would guess that they probably, just off the top of my head, sent some cash with Jamal Crawford to move him to Atlanta before Crawford was eventually bought out, and so that they might be impacted there, because ideally what they could do is just trade Bryce Johnson to a team and pay them to do that, take on his salary. They already declined his option for next year. But then if you wanted to keep both CJ Williams and Wilson, and they've already started like just sending those guys down to the G League in between games, just, which, you know, that's not great when you want to actually like have them practice and be a part of the team, but they feel like, hey, we need more time here. So that's kind of a perversion of the rule as well, that like they're just sending them down just to avoid more service time and bring them back up. And that's actually going to hurt those guys' performance in games, most likely. So they'd want to maybe move on from someone else. There isn't necessarily a logical candidate. Juwan Evans and Sedarius Thornwell were just second rounders this year. Montrezl Harrell has been playing reasonably well for them also. Sam Decker is a guy who has some promise. He's already under contract for next year. So it's really a tough situation for the Clippers to be in right now. I'm very interested to see, especially with those tax concerns, how it turns out.
And to answer the question that you had earlier, according to Eric Pincus, the Clippers have less than $500,000 of their cash remaining to send in trades, because not only did they pay the Hawks in the Jamal Crawford three-way trade that brought them Gallinari, they bought a pick that became Juwan Evans, and that money was paid in the 2017-18 season, so that counts towards it. So that's not great for them, because that's way less than, you know, what Bryce Johnson is going to be making, so they might need to attach an asset, and the Clippers are not exactly asset rich right now.
All right, we got lots more to get to here, including those power forward rankings, but hopefully if you are someone who plays daily fantasy basketball, you'll find all this news and analysis worthwhile for you. And if you play daily fantasy basketball, you should use Draft. You play with real life snake drafts with other people, just like in your season long league. And the reason it's better is because you have a much better chance of winning on Draft than you do in traditional salary cap sites, because it's much harder for professionals to play. They're not putting in 100 lineups a night, because you just can't do that with these snake drafts. You can't anticipate exactly how that draft is going to go. So you've got a much better chance of winning when you're not going up against professionals. You're just going up against other fans in general, like yourself. So it's very accessible as well. Drafts start from just $1. So there's a draft for everyone. And you can download the app by just searching Draft in your app store, or you can play right from your computer at draft.com. For limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make it your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code CapSpace. And that also, of course, lets them know that you came from us. So play a real money game for free using the promo code CapSpace on your first deposit at draft.com or the Draft app. Where should we go next year?
Well, I mean, I think the big one is Isaiah Thomas is getting closer to getting back. He's going to scrimmage on Friday in Napa. The Cavs have an off day there, and we don't know exactly when he's going to return. There's been, obviously, there would be some excitement if he came back against the Celtics on January 3rd, but sometime kind of in that range.
Yeah, and good to see him scrimmaging. There's some video of him just going up and dunking a couple of days ago as well. So he looks like he's getting close, but clearly they are going to move him along very slowly. And I think it would be very, very smart, especially given Isaiah's antipathy for the Celtics right now, that they not play him early on in his return in that January 3rd game, because he obviously, you know, the intensity there, it's not what you want to get back into after, you know, 8 months basically of not playing. And Derrick Rose, not really supposed to be close. He's progressed to running on that sprained ankle, but, you know, probably not really going to be much of a role for him anyway once Thomas has returned. In Houston, Clint Capella had been dealing with a sore heel, was able to return, had a wonderful game against OKC on Christmas, and then suffered an orbital fracture. He missed their blown 26-point lead against Boston the other night. He also missed their game at Washington, then will be reevaluated. Chris Paul, slated to return this weekend, either tonight or tomorrow night, unlikely to play both ends of that back-to-back. We don't know exactly as we record this on Friday afternoon what the story is going to be there. And then some ugly news out of Detroit. Avery Bradley, who has resumed basketball activities, that's not the ugly news, he's hoping to return in the next few days, but TMZ reporting that a woman claimed that Bradley sexually assaulted her while she was passed out drunk back on May 23rd in Cleveland when Bradley was in town during the Eastern Conference Finals, and that Bradley apparently agreed to a settlement with her. But now, of course, it has been leaked to TMZ, Bradley's attorney saying that he denies having engaged in any wrongdoing, and that the confidentiality agreement, which appears to indicate that some money was paid as a result, does specifically refute and deny the validity of all allegations of any wrongful conduct by Mr. Bradley, and that the sole purpose of the agreement was to protect the reputation and privacy of Mr. Bradley and his family. I guess the indication there being that, at least from Bradley's side, that this was more to protect his public image than obviously anything having to do with criminal wrongdoing. But I think it's going to be very interesting, especially in the post Harvey Weinstein climate that we find ourselves in here, to see whether the NBA is going to engage in any discipline here. You know, if this were the NFL and the way Roger Goodell does things, you imagine that there would be some kind of an investigation. I'm interested. The NBA has not been as proactive with these sorts of things. We did see them kind of blow with the wind a little bit more on domestic violence, in particular with Jeffrey Taylor back in 2014, but nothing came out of, for example, the Jeff Withey allegations from last year. And again, we have no idea how truthful any of these allegations are or are not, but it remains to be seen whether the league is going to kind of get involved in an extrajudicial kind of way that the NFL does, given the way that society seems to have focused in on these sorts of things a little bit more in these past few months or so.
And in this case, it gets even more complicated with the idea that there's a non-disclosure or confidentiality agreement, because then doing research on it, depending on how the terms of that sort of a thing get really complicated. But we can move on to Avery Bradley's former teammate, Jaylen Brown, who has been dealing with an ankle issue, and there's some concern that he's strained some ligaments around his MCL, but he's day-to-day. We don't know exactly what the timeline for him is at this moment, but they were still able to get that big comeback win against the Rockets on Thursday.
And pretty remarkable, too, that even the Boston Celtics, the team that we're like, I can't believe how many wings they have. They have the most wings of any team in the NBA, maybe outside of the Warriors. And yet, they're still a little shorthanded here with Brown. So, I mean, Ogilvy missed Wednesday with the back. Obviously, Hayward has been out all season. Marcus Morris is just now coming back from his sore knee. Didn't look great on Christmas. So, I guess the moral of the story is you can never have too many wings. In Brooklyn, D'Angelo Russell, Sean Marks, Brooklyn's GM, saying that he's still a couple of weeks away after having that knee surgery. In Golden State, Omri Caspi may miss tonight, or actually, in fact, has been ruled out tonight against Charlotte with an ankle injury. But Steph Curry, according to Steve Kerr, likely to return Saturday against the Memphis Grizzlies.
And I assume we'll talk on the 1560 about how different that they've looked as a team. And we still are kind of waiting for exactly what the timeline is going to be for. So Kyle Kyle Kuzma has a quad contusion, but played 41 minutes on Christmas, and I believe he played in their next game too. He is questionable for Friday night's game.
He suffered the quad contusion, to be clear, after Christmas.
Right. It was in that against Portland, am I remembering correctly?
I believe so. I think it was on Wednesday. But Luke Walton saying, you know, he wants to reduce his minutes anyway and wants to try and keep him healthy as a rookie, but also acknowledging, especially with some of the injuries that they have had, that it has been difficult to take him off the floor, especially since they've been so limited in terms of their shot creation. And then also in LA, Brandon Ingram missed the game against Portland, missed the game against Minnesota. Oh, and then he just played a mere 44 minutes against Memphis on Wednesday. Not the way I would have gone, but he says he may be sore, but he'll deal with it. He had issues with both quads apparently, but and he had undergone quite a minutes load again. They're very limited in terms of the available wings, so there's a temptation to play him a lot. But I mean, come on, you're not going anywhere this season. Like, 44 minutes is completely and utterly excessive.
It feels like we should go from there to the Sixers. So the Sixers, Embiid is not going to play in their next game, which I believe is on Saturday. And then Robert Covington injured his middle finger against Portland, is dealing with a myriad other injuries. Justin Anderson didn't play against Portland, but he's back now, which is good. And Markel Fultz is making progress. The hope is that he'll be able to play 5-on-5 soon. He's made this road trip. And so the Sixers are just dealing with this as they're handling just some trouble in terms of wins and losses as well.
Yeah, they are now 15-19, and with some of the other teams above them playing reasonably well, they continue to fall behind. And Covington in particular, I mean, they need him not only playing, but playing well and shooting well, really, to be a playoff caliber team. And obviously, Embiid's issues as well are concerned. At least J.J. Redick was able to return from that hamstring injury. In San Antonio, Kawhi Leonard has been playing a little bit more minutes, scored over 20, I think, for the first time the other night, had a couple of dunks. But just as they're getting him back, though he's still missing some back-to-backs, Rudy Gay out 2 weeks with a sore heel. This is right retrocalcaneal bursitis. I hope I pronounced that right, doctors. You can let me know if I got it wrong. That's an issue basically behind the heel bone. Worth noting, this is the opposite side of that left Achilles that he tore last year in Sacramento, but you know, certainly something that could be an issue. And the Spurs, of course, will manage this very conservatively.
And as Jeff McDonald has noted today, when the Rudy Gay thing came out, that the Spurs have had their normal complement of guys, not even at 100%, for exactly one game so far this year.
Yeah, and even then, Kawhi, of course, was on the minutes limit. In Utah, Hole Neto continues to miss time on the same play. He actually suffered a left knee bone bruise and concussion. No word on when he'll be back, but it seems like pretty severe concussion for him. And then from a couple of the tanking squads, Devon Reed, part of why I think they moved on from Mike James is that the number 32 overall pick out of Miami could return as early as January from his knee injury. And then in Atlanta, Mike Muscala, who's had this lingering ankle injury now for over 2 months, he at least is rehabbing in the G League, and he could finally be back. It'll be interesting to see how the minutes get managed. Now, John Collins, of course, playing a lot for them. Dwayne Dedmon remains out with that stress reaction for at least a couple more weeks. But Muscala, you imagine, will come right into it once he's ready to go, if he can play at his former level. You know, he's probably an upgrade, at least on what Miles Plumlee has been giving them. And then very quickly in Dallas, Dorian Finney-Smith was potentially to return this month per Rick Carlisle's comments earlier in the month, but does not appear to be close. He's still struggling with quad tendonitis, so that seems to be the injury du jour this season. And then two more things there, and we can get to those power forward rankings.
We had a lot of news to get through. Jamichael Green has missed the last couple games. He missed Wednesday with right knee soreness, and the Grizzlies are the walking wounded in terms of various parts of the court, but especially in the front court, because Brandon Wright's been missing time as well. And so they've relied more on Jarrell Martin, who has, I think, done a pretty good job in minutes. And Deontay Davis actually had some good minutes as well. And then the Knicks have been surviving without Tim Hardaway Jr. It looks like he's going to be looking towards coming back in early January, but he still hasn't started running yet. So you always kind of have to be patient. You know, it's in stages. And I always try to think of it of like when a guy guy reaches a milestone, then you start to look at the timeline anew from that point.
Yeah, and Frank Isola made the comment that, oh, really, the Knicks couldn't have figured out that he, like, wouldn't be back after the initial, you know, being reevaluated in 2 weeks at timeline. And it is interesting, this, you know, something that's entered the lexicon in the last couple of seasons here, this being reevaluated. And so I think the idea is just by saying 2 weeks that you are just avoiding a negative headline of just, oh, hey, Tim Hardaway Jr. is out for, you know, at least 4 weeks or something like that. And then actually one we have not discussed yet is Reggie Jackson will be reevaluated.
Oh, that's right.
8 weeks after a really nasty ankle sprain, grade 3, which you don't often see. Sounds like he's going to at least avoid surgery, but this is the type of bad ankle sprain where it's like, okay, this could affect your career, and really you lose some of that elasticity in the ankle. And so that's definitely kind of depressing for a Detroit team that had been playing well. I think, you know, hopefully they won't miss too much of a beat with Ish Smith, but again, you know, who's going to come in now as their backup? Langston Galloway maybe can move over there. He's not a true point. We know Avery Bradley is not. Luke Kennard can give them some kind of ball handling. They've got Dwight Bikes available, but, you know, he's never been a guy who has been able to stick in the NBA. So certainly the hope would be for me that maybe Jackson can get back and be 100% by the playoffs, but this sounds like something that really, you know, is going to take some time for him.
Well, and what was Glenn Robinson's? It was his grade 3, or was that just a really bad grade 2? Because he's been out, the whole season so far.
I'm not really sure what exactly it was, but I think he had surgery, so that was a different animal.
Oh, yeah, that I think you're right. And then the one other small piece of news that happened pretty recently, the Rockets, we've talked about this depth on the podcast, have been really dealing with injuries at various positions, and so they gave a non-guaranteed contract to Gerald Green. Gerald Green played in their loss on Thursday against the Celtics, got a warm reception from the Celtics, where he's played multiple times in his past, and I don't think he's exactly what they need, but having another body certainly helps.
Yeah, and just if you're looking for someone who can just be alive on the wing, which is what they need, he certainly can fulfill that role and maybe get some shots up. And, you know, I think at least as far as his three-point tendencies, he's finally in the right place, and he's from Houston area originally. All right, let's rank some power forwards here, man.
So originally I thought that the stress of positional definitions was the 2 and the 3, because we had gone through with all these guys, and you're going, it's like, oh, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tate, and the 3-4 as well, you know. And so we had all that done, and so I'm sitting there going, okay, you know, I know we still have some to do. And then I start looking through guys like Anthony Davis and Kristaps Porzingis and Horford, and just going, oh god, we have to do this all over again.
Yes, I'm afraid we do. And so coming up with a rubric for determining who's a power forward and who's the center, obviously there are plenty of guys who are more in the combo forward mold who are closer to threes really than they are to fives in this. But, and there are certainly plenty of other players who really fall into your traditional kind of power forward definition. Now, traditional power forward is not necessarily the same as what your typical power forward is today. So I thought, you know, obviously it's a case by case basis, but a few things came to mind. Number one, I think if you're going to try and make the argument that a guy is a center, he has to have at least played center significant minutes in his career and been effective there. So that's one. You know, Kristaps Porzingis is a perfect example there, right? I mean, I think we both agree that his best position in the long term will be center, but really has not been a good enough defensive rebounder, still a little bit too thin to be a center. And, you know, it's not like the team, to some degree they have been this year, but there's not been enough minutes to really say for sure. But the team has not been incredibly effective with him, and so he's played the vast majority of his minutes at power forward rather than center. So he's still a power forward to me. Another guy that you could look at is Al Horford. Horford to me probably is a center. Their best lineups all have him at center. He's playing about 60% of his minutes at center this year. In Atlanta, during the entirety of his time with Paul Millsap, he generally would play at center as well. So he's really been a center for many years. Certainly very capable of playing at power forward. He's starting at power forward right right now with some of the injuries that they've had, but really probably more of a center at this point, and especially as he's beginning to get a little bit slower. That's someone that you would look at. But in general, for me, if you can't shoot threes or at least be pretty capable out to long twos, you're probably a center for me, unless like you're someone who's under 6'8", like, you know, a Julius Randle or a Kenneth Faried, or you play for Tom Thibodeau, which means that you're Taj Gibson. And then also, like, you need to be able to guard the position, right? Like Dirk Nowitzki, he's a center now because the Mavericks realize there's just no way he can possibly guard out at the three-point line. Like today, if you are a power forward in today's game, you have to have the ability to guard out on the perimeter at the three-point line. You have to be able to guard someone like a Tobias Harris type of guy off the dribble. And you got to at least maybe have some modicum of ability to switch on to smaller players as well. I mean, there are not that many teams anymore who play conventional pick and roll defense with their four men. You know, that's probably, I shouldn't say it, but it's probably, you know, 50-50 or so at least at this point. So that's part of the job as well. And so the less that you can do all of those things, the more we're going to look at you as a five. And obviously we explained from the standpoint of a three, you know, what makes them a three when we did those rankings. And finally, to wrap up here too, we looked at it as what would your position be on most teams in the NBA, Dan?
Yeah, and so then you're trying to take out the specific stuff of, oh, they happen to play with this guy. And I'll do a quick rapid fire. So we've already talked about a lot of the ones, and this is on the guys who are not on the list, because obviously the guys who are, we're going to talk about them. So players that are on the center list: Derek Favors, Mike Muscala, Jordan Bell, Zach Randolph, Ed Davis, Sabonis, Willie Cauley-Stein, Kelly Olynyk, Gorgui Jang, my friend Joffrey LaVerne, and Zach Collins. Those are the ones that we haven't talked about yet. Those will all be, if they come up, they will come up in the center conversation.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that for guys like that, who certainly many of those guys have played at power forward, is just really their difficulty guarding out in the perimeter and inability to shoot it in a lot of cases too from three-point range. But really just in terms of guarding guys one-on-one on the perimeter, that's where I think is the number one thing that differentiates. And then to get back to Porzingis too, for a lot of teams, you know, they love to play these guys at center, but it's just harder to find a combo forward to play next to them, or harder to find more wings to play next to them. And so it makes more sense. The Knicks are a perfect example here, right? The Knicks have a billion centers. Many of them are pretty effective. And so it just makes more sense to play Porzingis at the four. He can handle it than if you play him at the five. I mean, they didn't have enough wings before Carmelo Anthony left. And now, I mean, you've got Lance Thomas. They don't really have any threes on the roster at all. You know, so you're going with like McDermott or trying to find a way to get enough wings out there when their centers are just better players. And we've noted that there just are more centers. You know, AD is another example of this, perhaps. I mean, I think he's someone who fits into more of the classic power forward mold, certainly very capable of playing center, probably best at center. But, you know, they have DeMarcus Cousins, who's a star next to him as well. So he plays the four a lot of the time and then switches over to five.
And he also doesn't want to play center. I mean, that's a part of the reason why they've brought in so many centers over the years. Oshik and Ajinsa and Cousins, you know, they're paying all those guys serious money. And a big part of that is because, yeah, he can do it in the playoffs, but he doesn't necessarily want to take that grind. And I totally understand that. And then to get into the rankings themselves, something we're doing in this that we did in all of the other ones is there are tiers, and then in the early tiers there are rankings within the tiers, but in the later ones there are not. So don't be like, oh, you know, once we get into like tier 5 and 6 or wherever that line is, of being like, oh, you said this name before that name, those guys are all so close that we're not really going to draw differences. Of course we are going to in certain circumstances have preferences, and at least for me, I'm not as interested, other than at the tippy top, in terms of where guys fit within a tier. It's more like where you draw the lines. Because in power forwards, I actually found this in certain places to be a very hard place to draw a line.
Yeah, I for me, it wasn't as bad in the first couple of tiers. I actually will say that I found it actually easier to rank these guys than twos and threes. And I think the big reason for that is that it's certainly true to some degree, but a lot of these guys aren't as dependent on the ability to shoot the three ball for their value. And that's why I struggled a lot with twos and threes, to just say, all right, whose shooting is real, whose isn't. If this guy shot well up until this year and now he's not shooting well the first 2 months of the year, how does that affect his ranking? There isn't quite as much of that to me here, but I will start with the lone player in my top tier, and that is Giannis Antetokounmpo.
So I have Giannis number one as well, but I have him with Anthony Davis in tier one.
That was a struggle.
Yeah, it was a challenge. I mean, there are arguments both ways. I mean, for me, me the idea that Davis can be a game-changing defender, even if that happens a lot at center, it still counts, you know, that he's a really good power forward. He is a wonderful offensive player as well. And the reason why I had them in the same tier is also just kind of from a team-building perspective, because really, we should talk about this, that it's really like kind of who you would want to have for the rest of this season. This is not projecting moving forward. This is not our prospect rankings. This is not best career. And so if you're thinking about it, separating out the team circumstances, while Giannis is wonderful and what he does is super important for his team, his limitations with certain other constructs would become a greater challenge. Whereas Anthony Davis, I feel like, is more of a plug and play guy. I have no problem with you having them in separate tiers, but I feel like to me, the line between them is so faint that I wanted, and I also thought that the line between them and everyone else was broad enough that it just felt appropriate.
Yeah. And I had Davis, by the way, in the second tier, ranked number two overall as well, by himself. I think he's still quite above the rest of these guys here. And certainly, you know, Davis's ability to play center, you know, I think of him mainly as a power forward. That's how he thinks of himself. But if you have that ability to move to center, and Giannis has the ability to move to the three as well, you know, as defensively. And I like when guys can play up when they can, but he certainly can play the three, can guard even ones if he needs to on switches, can guard fives on switches. Giannis even has started playing a little bit of five as well here. So I think the reason I had Giannis in a separate tier above Davis, I think Giannis has been, you know, a clear top five guy. I just think that wings who can handle the ball are just a more valuable species. And while Giannis, we're ranking him as a power forward because he can certainly play there defensively, no problem, and has played there the vast majority of his minutes this season and has the size of a power forward, and also can't really shoot at all. Like, that's part of why I think of him as more of a power forward than a three. But the ability to just be a guy, you just throw him the ball, grab and go, like, he's just a more valuable offensive player than Davis, in my opinion. So that's why I had it. And I also think that Giannis, another reason that I had Giannis higher, actually, is just the injury issue.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go.
Hurt. And Davis, you know, he's always due to miss, you know, a few games, or just, you know, he averages, what, 65 games a year for his career, or 70 games a year, and Giannis, you know, plays nearly every game.
And that is a big differentiator in terms of value, just because these guys are so good that getting them an extra 5 to 10 games per year means a lot. And I'm guessing we're going to have a discrepancy on the next thing, and maybe not in terms of the ordering, but I went back and forth on this a lot. So I have those two guys in tier one. My tier two is just one guy, and that's Draymond Green. And the reason why is that I think he's proven it to a different degree than a guy like Porzingis, who's close on my list, and he has a different kind of versatility than a lot of the other players that we're going to talk about in this next tier. So it's kind of like, I don't know if it's reliable All-NBA. I didn't really draw any sort of definitional thing, but also the fact that he can play center in strong defensive lineups is a real game breaker. And so he is not at the same level of Giannis and AD, but to me, he is at this moment in time separated from the other guys.
Yeah, and I understand that argument. He also has much better health than anyone below him in this tier. But I had a five-person tier three with Draymond at the top of that, and it's certainly a reasonable argument to me that he should be above all these guys in a separate tier. And then Porzingis, number four, LaMarcus Aldridge, number five, Kevin Love, six, and Blake Griffin, seven. With Love, Griffin, Porzingis, Aldridge to a lesser extent, the injury concerns all come in. Green, just always been a hard guy to rank, but certainly, I mean, if you look at any kind of advanced stats, Green well above Porzingis, Aldridge, Griffin. Love is probably the second best of this group just in terms of, you know, RPM on off base stats. But I also think Green hasn't been as good this year, but he's rounding into form lately. He was dealing with that shoulder issue, but in general, not a guy who has missed significant time. And you got the feeling, even with that shoulder issue, that he could have played through it if it had been playoff time. And you've mentioned also he's proven it in the playoffs. He can also play center, which a lot of these guys can, but he can play center at an elite level. The switching that he provides, one through five. And then, you know, his offense will wax and wane, but his ability to grab and go is a big part of their transition attack. His passing, obviously, you know, he's probably the best passer of anybody on this list outside of maybe Giannis. So I agree that Draymond is clearly at the top of this list, and I wouldn't argue with you having him in a higher tier.
Something that's striking about this group, which mine is almost the same, the only difference is being that I have Draymond above it, and then I have Paul Millsap included in. I think I know why you're going to not have him there. But so the striking thing about this is how known all of these commodities are. This is not anything like in so many of these other ones where it's like, oh, well, what if they put it together or anything like that? Like, we've the entirety of the Dunked On Basketball podcast, we've talked about Love, Aldridge, Griffin, and Millsap, and then Porzingis, I mean, for his entire career, even you and I watched the tape of him when he was at Sevilla. You know, that these guys, we know what they are, and we know that they're incredibly talented. They're all of them are gifted offensively, and the trade-offs between them, I mean, it is a lot of it is beauty in the eye of the beholder, which I do heartily enjoy, because it is about, you know, what you need for that specific team. And all of these guys have had moments of absolute brilliance. I mean, I would say LaMarcus, other than Porzingis probably, of my tier for this, has had the best season. I still had Love over him, but again, you're picking hairs, and it's about what you like most and these guys, and what you like least in certain other ways.
Yeah, for me, Love is just lower due to potential injury concerns, and also just, you know, being pretty much a one-way player at this point, you know, which is just it's tough to deal with. And even Love, you know, is someone who has played, he started at center this year, so you had to think about maybe putting him at center, but he's very much a classic power forward type body. And on most teams, again, you know, Cleveland has LeBron James, they've got Jay Crowder, they've got Jeff Green, they've got a lot of guys now where he can play center and you can fill in around him on the wing. Most teams he would clearly be a power forward. I changed up the more I thought about it. I actually put LaMarcus ahead of Porzingis. I think Porzingis, with some of the injury concerns, and then just he's kind of been dropping off and is shooting from the field as well.
Well, that's never happened before at this point in the season.
Yes. Yeah. And so just when I started really thinking about, okay, you know, going forward, who would I rather have? It probably Aldridge would probably be the guy. Very close between those two. And then, I mean, Blake Griffin, just the injuries, you wonder, but he played at a pretty high level this year before he went down. So I would put him here. And then Millsap, you are correct. The reason I had him at number 8, but I had him a tier below due to his age, and he's going to turn 33 this year. The Nuggets really not that much better offensively. You know, you can even make the argument that he was hurting their offense when he was out there. They have not really missed a beat without him, although, you know, obviously defensively, I think he's still a very valuable player, but not a believer in his shooting. And I'm not sure that he's that helpful of an offensive player at this point in his career. And, you know, he's also out with this wrist injury now, and we'll see, you know, when you consider just value over the rest of the season, you have to consider that he's going to miss the next month and a half probably.
Yeah, I kind of weighed it more in terms of propensity for injuries rather than what they were currently going through, just as an intellectual exercise for me. I found it more interesting. Sure. But you can do that either way. And the other reason why I had Millsap in that tier is just because I think he's a significantly better player and has proven it so much more than the next guys on the list. A lot of players that I do really like, but that he to me is in a different caliber. And so, you know, you're never going to be perfect with the tier system. Some, you know, the difference between 7 and 8 on some lists is much different than between 8 and 9. But I felt more comfortable with him there. And then you get into this next group.
Well, so one more thing I missed out too, but before we move on, I think for me, it really was more just about his age coming back.
Yeah, he'll be 33.
Anticipating what he'll be.
He'll turn 33 about when he comes back from injury. It's February is his birthday.
Yeah, so anticipating what he's going to be going forward and just the inevitable progression of time. If this were just, you know, what have these guys done, you know, last year, then he's clearly, you know, he's in this group with Love and Griffin. But so who else did you have then in this next year? Mine was 5 deep, but there are a lot of guys around this area that I began to really struggle with.
Yeah, it was similar for me. So the way I classified this group was unambiguous positive. So that doesn't mean they're perfect players. Obviously, if they were perfect players, they would be much higher on this list. But it's players who, if you put them in a variety of circumstances, I think they would help your team more than they would hurt you a vast majority of the time. And that's really where I drew the differentiation line. And so that's why Millsap could easily be in this group, but I have him one above that. So for me, the guys that I felt comfortable putting in this group, Tobias Harris is having a wonderful year. He was good last year too. He's been, you know, obviously his 3-point shooting is largely unsustainable, but I thought he had a nice year in Detroit. And then the guy who would have been his front court partner in Orlando, Aaron Gordon, has really stepped up this year. I like him as a support defensive player. You know, the whole idea of him being a wing stopper always seemed unrealistic to me. And even if he's not shooting 45% from three like he was early in the year, if he can be high 30s, then that's still an incredibly valuable player. And then the other two guys who we might disagree on, I have a feeling with that, is Serge Ibaka. I just still, even though he's probably better at center than the four, I still think he can really contribute. And Thaddeus Young. Thaddeus Young is in really, to me, in line with guys like Tobias Harris and Aaron Gordon, where not really dominant on both ends, but he's good enough that you'll be happy with him. So to me, that puts him in the top half of the power forwards, but not, you know, outside of this group or anything crazy like that, like above this group.
Yeah, so let me hit on a lot of those. So my number 8, Paul Millsap, number 9, Aaron Gordon. 10 was Tobias Harris. And some very controversial inclusions here, guys that I really struggled with. Number 11, Carmelo Anthony. And number 12, Jabari Parker. And to talk about Gordon and Harris first, both those guys very dependent in this ranking for the way they've shot from three so far this season. You know, Gordon, the rest of his jump shooting has not really improved. You know, he's 35% on long twos still this year, but 41% from three. Harris is at 45% from three. And he certainly, you know, both those guys, their shots look a lot better. So, you know, you'd like to think there's something real there, maybe not as real as those lofty percentages would indicate. And Gordon, you know, getting a read on where his defense is kind of difficult. Certainly athletically, you'd think that he would be good, but these Magic teams have been pretty awful. How much of that is Vucevic and some of the other bad defenders? How much of it really is still on him? And then to round out this tier, Carmelo and Parker. Carmelo, I think, is just going to play better the rest of the year. I mean, I think he's going to shoot better. We've seen him get attacked defensively, and that's very worrisome, to be sure. But I think he can be a lot better than he's been. And Jabari was a very, very impressive offensive force last year before he went down. A similar type of player, though, in being mostly offensively oriented. But the news on Parker as far as getting back seems to be good. You know, it seems like he basically is ready. He's not going to come back till February. But both of those guys are tough. I mean, it's to have guys, and remember also that with Carmelo, he's being underutilized right now, probably on this OKC team, because they have Westbrook and George, who are two superior creators for him. You know, if you wanted to put him on another team where he could be a top two option, he still, I think, would be capable of fulfilling that reasonably well. And same thing with Parker too. I mean, playing next to Giannis, he probably will be underutilized, but we're trying to get an idea of these guys in the landscape of the league. And if you want to say as offensive players, you know, these guys should probably, you know, are 8th and 9th on this list. I would say, you know, they'd be ahead of Millsap, Gordon, and Harris. Obviously, they have defense limitations, but being able to create shots is a very important skill, and still be able to shoot the ball as well. So that's why I have them a little bit higher, just in terms of like where I think they could be on a typical team, even if neither of them are particularly set up to thrive. I just value that skill of being, you know, close to, you know, a number one, number two option type of player at the power forward.
I get it with Jabari. I mean, for me, if he had proven it that he could made it back even 90% from the ACL, he would be in tier four for me, and he would be high in tier four. You know, he's that's how good a player he is. And we talked about this a little bit I brought it up because I had him as an honorable mention in the prospects podcast, because he was a wonderful offensive player last year. And sure. And power forwards, you know, it's a lot of times, especially if they're a straight four, it's value added defensively, but the ability to create reliable shots is incredibly valuable at every position. And so a guy who's deficient but not abysmal defensively has a lot of value there. And so I think that's a really good argument for him. If I would have him there if I saw it, but I haven't seen it yet. I don't count standing there diligently watching him at the Golden One Center shooting for 25 minutes.
He practiced with you know, the Wisconsin Herd 5-on-5. He's ready to go, man.
And so, and then with Melo is actually some of the inspiration for me defining my terms as the unambiguous positives, and the next one is going to be ambiguous positives, where it's positive players, but there are things that, and with Melo, you have the kind of the two criticisms. So obviously the positives are, you brought him up, they're easy to talk about. The negatives, I mean, defensively, he's taken a massive step back, not only in terms of just capability, but also effort. I think that he's been worse defensively the last couple of years, and the Thunder have been good defensively, but I think a lot of that has been in spite of him, and we see that with various elite defensive teams this year. And then the other one is, I articulated this, and a lot of people got really mad at me, as they often do, talking about Devin Booker in the prospects pod and in the shooting guard pod, with the idea being that they're very good at what they do, but I don't think that, especially with Melo to a certain point, that he is good enough at it to really elevate an offense. It's more like he can get them to a certain level, and there is absolutely a value to that, especially if they did it with the second unit with Oklahoma City. But if you're talking about like, oh, if he was on a different team, he would help their offense. That's true, but I don't think it would help their offense be great. It would help their offense be good to maybe very good. And that is valuable, but is a whole heck of a lot less valuable than what he used to bring when his presence alone would be there. And so that's why he's tier five for me. And if you believe that what we have seen this year is not as reflective, and that is a fair argument to make, then you can have
because
him tier
this two. Year he sucked. Like, if you were just ranking these guys solely on their production this year, I mean, Carmelo is like 500 true shooting, high usage, you know, which is below average efficiency, high usage, taking the ball out of the hands of more efficient players, and he's sucked on defense. So when you look at that, you know, he wouldn't even be in the top 30 in terms of just his production this year. This is just a bet that he can be better, or that he could be better in another circumstance. And if he plays like this all year, you know, the drop in my rankings will be precipitous. I'm just not quite ready to give up on him yet.
Yeah, and that's fair. So let's, I think a way to kind of...
Oh, can we talk about, let's talk about Thad Young.
Sure.
Who you had in this tier, and I had really kind of down the middle of my next tier, which would be just kind of solid stars. And I think for me, the idea of Young, he's someone that we've said it was underrated for a while. I like having him as, you know, a combo forward, but I think defensively he can have some really nice games. On the glass, he's inadequate. You know, he's a big part of why they have not been good on the defensive glass, as their centers have not been good either. And then, you know, offensively, I would look at him at a little bit below average as an offensive player. You know, he can shoot threes. He's shooting a few more, looks more comfortable. He's been in the 35% range or so this season. It took him a while to get over that mental block of Doug Collins telling him not to shoot threes from earlier in his career. But he still goes left around the rim every time. He's not an amazing finisher. He's got like an okay floater game, but his usage is like way lower than you would think it would be. And he's not going to really ever do anything one-on-one. He can't really run a pick and roll. He's not a great, you know, he's very switchable as the role man in a pick and roll as well. So I would look at him as, if you're going to rank starting power forward in terms of their offense, I would rank him as below average. And then I think defensively he's solid, but not like amazing, and not a guy who necessarily brings it every night. Although he has had some really nice games as well. That Twitter NBA show, I think he had like six steals or something like that. But so that's my feelings on Young. I think of it more just, you know, kind of in the mix with a lot of these other solid starting power forwards. Used to be combo forwards. Now they're kind of more just straight.
Yeah, I just think of him offensively. What I like about Young is that he isn't as high usage. So I feel like he's in a good spot there, where he's not kind of over aggressive, and also defensively he's capable and doesn't make as many mistakes, which I like. You know, sometimes that's a bigger frustration for me when a guy, especially power forward, leaves the teammates high and dry. I could totally I bounced him. He was one of the few players that actually moved in tiers for me. A lot of times it was about defining terms, but he did. And I don't know. I think he's done a little bit to be there. But again, these are really close on the margins. And what I found interesting going into tier five, which I called ambiguous positive. So these are guys that I think help their teams, but they don't help against everybody, or they have weaknesses, is how many different types of players, or the reasons that guys got in this tier are completely different. So like for me with Melo, Melo's in this tier because defensively he's been bad, and because the misgivings that I talked about before. Whereas like PJ Tucker is in that next tier for completely different reasons. Like he's such a strong player defensively, and then he's become much more comfortable with his strengths and weaknesses offensively. So like PJ Tucker and Melo would not succeed in the same circumstances. They're very, very different players. And this tier is basically, it's kind of like the Island of Misfit Toys, but that's not really fair, because some guys, I think that being in this tier is kind of an accomplishment.
Yeah, I think so. And there one guy who I really struggled with ranking in here. I mean, I had a bunch of probably over 10 guys, and which I kind of thought is basically just, you know, solid starter type of players. You have this guy on your team, you're not like, oh man, we got to upgrade here. But Kyle Kuzma was someone that I really struggled in ranking here, because, you know, I think he, especially as he's able to handle just a slightly larger role, you know, he certainly could have gone up into that same tier, kind of, you know, profiling as like a Carmelo, Jabari Parker type of offensive player. But, you know, we don't know how real the shooting is yet. The defense, it's been a struggle for him. That seems to be the consensus, that he's not been good defensively so far, although he's made some stride recently. But, you know, he's been putting up these 30-point games. He's been overall pretty efficient. And so just if he just keep this up a little bit longer, he's got the ability potentially to rocket it into a higher tier. I mean, much as we dealt with the prospects, he was one of the guys who just was a struggle for me. And then some of the other guys that I had in this tier, I mean, I think it's really, for this, it's more interesting of like, when does this year end? So here are the guys that I thought of as just like solid starters, you know, in very rough order. And just feel free to stop me if you want to discuss any of the, if you have discrepancies on any of these guys or you wanted to hit them. So Serge Ibaka, you know, I know you had him ahead. For me, especially looking at like the playoffs, his lack of awareness, I think was a big problem last season. A little bit of an injury risk as well. Ryan Anderson really improved defensively this year. The spacing, his ability to shoot it from just so deep. I mean, there's nobody else on this list really who shoots it with the type of range that he does from the power forward position. You know, every time people are like, oh man, this guy could be like a Ryan Anderson type, I'm like, oh really? Is he he's going to make like 40% on, 28 foot three pointers. Like, okay, I'll wait to see. He made some threes in college or whatever, but Ryan Anderson is an absolutely special shooter for his size at 6'10". Danilo Gallinari I had in there as well, more of a power forward at this point, but he's got to actually stay healthy, and his game has declined when he's been in there.
And so with Gallo, if I weren't as concerned, and not saying clean bill health, but if I were less concerned with health, I think on talent, he's tier four. But being healthy is something that provides real value, and he can't do that right now. And that's been an issue for him the last couple of years. And so so for me, he's tier four in talent, and then tier five in for me as well for that reason. But
I would say he's even tier five, even healthy at this point, just because of his defensive limitations and the fact that I think his offensive game, his athleticism game into the rim has fallen off significantly.
It's such a shame that the glute thing happened at the same time that Blake Griffin was out, because we've never really gotten to see there was a little bit of that last year with that really fun Denver team once after they traded Nurkic. But the idea of him playing the four, not even next to somebody like Jokic, which is ridiculous, but next to more of like a traditional five, I think that would still work. I'm a believer that it would still work if he were ever healthy. But again, that's a huge concern.
All right, so some other names. This is kind of in rough order for me, but very rough. I didn't spend a ton of time here. I've just got bullet points here instead of ranking. But Kuzma would be right at the top of this group for me right now. Nikola Mirotic as well, another guy who, if he keeps playing like this, would be awesome. But now, of course, the Bulls are starting marketing. And again, I think that it has hurt Mirotic's production some. And, he's been shooting the ball well, but he's had these stretches of shooting well, and then he'll go ice cold again. His former teammate in Chicago, Taj Gibson, is having a really nice year so far. He's really one of the few guys on this list that we counted as a four, despite not even having a semblance of three-point range. But he's continued to play well, and just the individual offensive talent lets him get by. And he also has some added versatility to play center in another situation, so you got to throw that in as well. The Morris brothers, both right in there for me. James Johnson as a combo forward, can shoot the three a little bit, handle the ball, defend. Al Farouq Aminu, who quietly is actually shooting, at last I checked, like 48% on threes on a short number of attempts, of course. And then three guys who I thought about putting down in the bottom tier, but these are kind of the last three guys in this tier for me that I think of as just a solid starter level of player. Marvin Williams, PJ Tucker, and Jamichael Green.
Yeah, I had challenges with all those guys. Marvin, he's kind of been a victim of circumstance a little bit with Charlotte, just that he hasn't had the full chance to kind of show himself, and that team has been just dealing with so many injuries. But I had him missed here.
What does that mean? What do you mean the full chance to show himself?
Well, I mean, when Kemba missed time, and so their offense was just a train wreck, and I'm talking about last year.
Oh.
And MKG, a guy who playing with a guy who can't shoot, so that he doesn't get the chance to drive as much. They also play with a traditional five almost the entire time.
Yeah, I don't think he can. I think he just is a standstill three-point shooter who and I think his ability to switch is starting to become more limited. He's flashed some nice rim protection, that's fallen off a little bit as well, but he's shooting 40% on threes, but he seems like pretty much a one-trick pony offensively. Every now and again he'll slip a screen, but I've toyed with having him lower than this, but he's still a solid player, but he's just maybe a guy who should probably be moving to the bench pretty shortly. They of course have no other ops there.
And I like that we both had the same problem with this. My tier five had 20 guys in it, and I actually created, so I had a tier five, and then I had a tier six, and then I had then I created a tier 5.5 where it's just I felt less confident in those guys, and that's where I had Al Farouq Aminu. And with Jamichael Green, I just need to watch more of him this year. Last year I would have had him in tier five, and I just need to watch since coming back from the injuries he's been dealing with. So I had him in the next one in my 5.5 just because I was feeling a little conservative with him. But again, it's such a he was right on the margin for me between this one and the last one.
Yeah, so then my line of demarcation here was maybe some young guys who are kind of around the fringes of being a starting level player but haven't really proven it yet, or guys who really are starting to get into having major weaknesses on one side of the ball or the other. So Julius Randle was near the top of that list for me, a guy who almost is playing as a center, but he's really probably just too small to be considered as a normal center even in today's day and age. Dario Saric is in this category for me as well. Bobby Portis, who actually has played extremely well this year, he's got a PR in the 20s, 25% usage, 56% true shooting is not bad. Still not great defensively, but he's played well enough that he at least deserves some mention. He's been a big part of their surge as well as his fellow member of the 1-2 punch, Nikola Mirotic. Trey Lyles is shooting the ball extremely well from three right now in Denver, playing some small ball center even as well. I mean, he's shown some promise. Lauri Markkanen, another guy, you know, starting to lose his efficiency, had a hot start of the year. Unclear exactly where he's at as far as helping a team win, but you know, he's shown some skills, but he's still a rookie. So this might even be a little bit too high to be talking about him in this year. And then Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is a really interesting case. Smallest guy, you know, probably lightest guy on this list as well. Can't shoot three-pointers, but you know, has gotten to the foul line, has defensive versatility, not quite a lockdown guy on the perimeter, but it has been effective for Brooklyn this year. So I think someone who deserves mention is being talked about, you know, kind of a fringe starter type of player on a D's team.
Yeah, I ended up with Rondae in this tier as well. I've liked what he's done this year, and a guy who deserves credit for focusing on, you know, what he does well, and finally getting to play his natural position, which I'm really encouraged by. The only real differences I have that weren't addressed previously was, I don't know why, I still believe in Ersan Ilyasova. I have him just because what he's done when he's played, I think, is kind of in this group. And so, you know, talk about, you know, what Lauri Markkanen could be, you know, and Lowry will be a much better player than Ersan Ilyasova very, very soon. But I think that, you know, if you have him on your team, you're okay. You want somebody better, but he's kind of there. And then the guy who was actually...
Yeah, and that's a reasonable point there, to react to what you said about Ilyasova. You know, he has been playing now. He's really slow now, though.
Oh, yeah.
Before, but takes a bunch of charges, can hit some shots. And yeah, I mean, if you're like, hey, you need to win a game tomorrow, and you can either have Lauri Markkanen out there or Ersan Ilyasova, you know, I might actually want Ersan Ilyasova. You know, so that's a reasonable argument.
And then the last guy who I ended up putting in my, I called it the not quite tier, and I'll talk about, there are a couple guys that I had that you had in this tier that I have in that one for various reasons, was Nemanja Bjelica. Like, I really like Bjelica, but we need to see it more from him. Like, and there are going to be a lot of guys in that not quite tier for me. Actually, do you want me to just go into that right now?
Well, so was there anyone that I had, it sounds like Markkanen is one, but anyone else that I had in that kind of tier six, you know, just below the level of, you know, solid starter type of player that you disagreed with, that you felt like that's too high for them?
Yeah, a couple. So Dario Saric, for me, again, it's the idea of what he kind of provides on a good team. I think of him more as a really good second unit guy, and so I had him down there. Yeah. I actually had Lauri Markkanen in that tier, even though I said the thing about Ilyasova. I think that the decision between those two guys is close. And also with Saric, it's the idea of kind of surplus value versus negative. Like, if he's shooting the way that he did early in this year, then yes, absolutely he is in this tier. But for me, what he's good at, you still want a primary ball handler. He's more of a support player and all that kind of way. So I'm still relying a little bit on my prior interpretations with him. And he's done a nice job this year, but I just want to see him prove it a little bit more, which is why he's in the not quite. And then it's the same thing with Bobby Portis. Like, Portis having a really nice year, I just want to see a little bit more of it from him. And so, like, one thing just kind of spitballing here, we didn't talk about this ahead of time, would be, I wouldn't want to redo this in June or July or May or whenever, but one thing that would potentially be worth doing is just saying who has moved tiers, and not ranking anybody, not doing anything else, but, like, because a lot of this will be guys will prove it, you know. And so, to kind of get into the next part of it, a lot of these guys, the tier six, because I drew a kind of a different line than you did. Saric, Larry Nance, John Collins, John Isaac, like, a lot of these guys, Bobby Portis, Mike Scott, who has had a wonderful year, but he was abysmal last year. You know, he got cut by the Suns, and then nobody picked him up. Like, so I just want to see more of it from those type of guys. And so, and I was surprised originally. I thought Trey Lyles was going to be in this, but then when I really thought about it, I'm like, well, he's shown something offensively that is in line with what we saw before. It's just been a better version of it, and he's younger, so it makes more sense than with a guy like Mike Scott. So that was kind of there. And then the second flavor of not quite was guys that aren't, it's not necessarily proving it, it's more just like, I didn't feel comfortable having them in that group. And so I'll rattle through those quickly. Kyle Anderson, Lance Thomas, Jonas Jerebko, who is having a nice year, but
I like Jerebko, I think, better than you. So that would be another guy that, I mean, he's been pretty solid.
Like, oh, he's been good this year, but he didn't inspire as much in me when he was in Boston. Then the last two guys for me, John Luehr and Mirza Teletovic, guys that I like, but just through injuries and through other things. It's just like, I didn't feel comfortable. Like, if you threw them in the starting lineup, I wouldn't feel happy about it. So then to me, that makes them the line between 5.5 and 6.
A few other guys that are just are interesting to touch on here. You know, Nance is one where I think just his complete inability to shoot from the power forward position is just he's a massive negative on offense, although I think he can provide something defensively. You know, John Collins, just a guy I expect to be much higher on this list pretty soon. And then so just some kind of disappointments that they're not higher by this point. You know, Juancho Hernan Gomez is certainly one of those guys. You know, I think it'll remain to be seen how much of it is just lack of improvement. I mean, Trey Lyles is playing really well also. You know, he's going to be tough to supplant. But also just for Juancho, the illness, you know, how much he missed another game with an illness. Not sure if that's related to the mono that he had earlier in the season. And then the power forwards of disappointment in Phoenix, Chris and Bender, you know, still were not even talking about them as even being like close to competent power forward, as much as we weren't talking about them as being anywhere close to our top prospect list.
And along kind of the disappointment line in that way, it'd be nice. I'm of course an ardent supporter of Scal, but he hasn't earned a place higher on this list at this point.
Yeah.
And
he's a guy who, you know, I think just has to be a power forward because he's just too skinny to be a center at this point, you know, but really has the skills of a center.
Yeah, he is a tweener in that way. I've thought for a long time that the best role for him would be playing some four and then being like a second unit five, kind of a change of pace type guy. But it would be crazy if that happens, because if that happens at the same time that we're seeing a lot of these more ground and pound centers move in there, he really doesn't make sense at the five against those guys. So it'll be a challenge to kind of fit him in, and he's going to have to get a lot better. I think a lot of these guys in this kind of group are. And then somebody else we should mention that I had trouble with just because his highs are so high, but they haven't happened as much, as Joe Johnson. Like, I enjoy Joe. He was huge in that series against the Clippers last year. Like, they don't win that series without him. But that's a small part of it.
He's not a starter any longer.
Right.
You know, I mean, he's and we put him here at power forward just because, you know, he can't really defend any position anymore, but he's just kind of here at power forward just because, you know, that's kind of what he plays. But, you know, you don't really want him defending anybody. And he also just has not had a good year so far this year. Certainly, you know, if you wanted to talk about where he was in last year's playoffs, he would be a lot higher. Well, Danny, you may have to take Serge Ibaka out of your tier four.
What, because he got suspended for a game for violating team rules? No.
Yes, the suspension resulted from an altercation between Ibaka and a Raptors staff member after the December 27th game in Oklahoma City, per a Raptors release. So, all right, we done here?
Yeah, I think we are. I mean, so people who are subscribers to our Patreon, I put up the audio version of my piece, so you can listen to that on the, and I actually talked about that on SiriusXM Radio with David Griffin and I can't remember the co-host's name. I feel bad now. So that was fun. We talked about that today, and we'll be back soon. I mean, it's unusual that we record on a Friday afternoon, and part of the reason we did that is because we wanted to get this out and have it ruminate for a little while before the 15 and 60.
All right, that'll do it for today. Don't forget about our sponsor, Draft. Thank you to them for sponsoring today's program. It's not too late to join the highest rated fantasy football app for fantasy basketball. That is, of course, Draft. Download the app anytime. You just search Draft in your app store, join a game in minutes, or play right from your computer on draft.com. Whatever you want, for a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code CAPSPACE and let them know that you came from us. Play a real money game for free. Just use the promo code CAPSPACE on your first deposit.